Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 398th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at OnceTheMetro.com and the rest of the SB Nation family of soccer websites. Chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my abilities. And what is going on here with these conference finals in the first leg? First things first, let's go to Portland hosting Sporting Kansas City. What you saw in the Western Conference first leg final is, very simply put, two former teammates that started the 1996 New York, New Jersey Metro Stars as these men battling wits against each other in a higher form of competition. Giovanni Savarese, who was torturing goals and defenses, torturing them as he has won several NASL championships with the New York Cosmos, goes out facing Peter Vermees, who has been an MLS Cup champion in his own right. In his own right. For Kansas City Wizards and Sporting Kansas City, you know, whether it be for a player or a coach, winning titles for that club and cementing his coaching legacy. Let's be honest about that. Coaching legacy. What you have seen is a man, or these men, battling out not so much against each other with a football, but with their wits. And this is what I expected when these two got together in the MLS Cup playoffs, especially these Western Conference finals. I think what you saw was a battle that could drag each side deep into the second leg over at Children's Mercy Park in Kansas City, Kansas. What you are going to see in this second leg, unless there's going to be a breakthrough somewhere, plain and simply put, we got ourselves a battle. A hard-fought battle of wits. And even though there might be an issue going on for maybe getting goals, whoever converts will probably win this one hands down. That, my friends, is what we're going to see here in this Western Conference battle. This is what we are going to witness in this Western Conference battle, because you got two men that are basically going after it, and they're doing it the right way. This should be a huge moment for this Western Conference situation. It's scoreless as of right now. We don't know if the Portland Timbers can sneak out of Children's Mercy Park with a possibility of taking this thing on away goals. Sporting Kansas City didn't score any. But at the same time, Portland Timbers didn't put anything in the back of the net either. That is going to be a very interesting tilt. It should be a lot of fun. We are going to get ourselves a great, great second leg. And it should be absolutely a fun night at Children's Mercy Park. It all depends who takes the advantage. Will the Timbers find a way to take this match on away goals? Or will Sporting Kansas City find a way and they will reign supreme for that Western Conference title? We'll have to wait and see what's going to happen there, folks. But once again, this is going to be a very, very interesting thing. A very, very interesting thing when these two sides are going to battle each other and how the situation will be handled for this coming Thursday night. 3 days. 3 days before we get to the second leg of the conference finals in the 2018 MLS Cup playoffs sponsored by Audi. This is just what we wanted to see in the battle of probably not so much, I think it's like the two best sides, but to be honest with you, two former teammates managing against each other when MLS 1.0 began back in 1996. When they were teammates playing at Giant Stadium in the Meadowlands in East Rutherford, New Jersey, this is going to be something special in the Western Conference Final. In the East is probably the biggest troubling first leg I have ever seen a manager do in these playoffs. Chris Armas right now, while he changed his tactics for the first half of this first leg and then reverted back to bread and butter, the questions have been thrown out there. Why did he not stick with the press against Atlanta United in the first leg? The New York Red Bulls are back at this point in time to same old Metro as Chris Armas came out of nowhere and abandoned the press until he had to change things up to start the second half. And while they were able to get something done, sadly, VAR wipes out the equalizer by Bradley Wright Phillips. And yes, there was an injury to Kamar Lawrence, but you know what, though? You must give credit to Atlanta United. They, not the question of who wanted it more. That's not the question in hand. The question is, who stuck with their tactics? That is the number one question. Who stuck to their tactics? And that was Tata Martino. Tata Martino stuck with his tactics. A little bit of a wrinkle because, one, I think he found a way to beat Tyler Adams. And number two, a little bit more, shall we say, of a shot yourself in the foot moment. Michael Murillo is not himself. Michael Murillo looked lost. For the first time ever, he just did not look like himself. But give credit to Atlanta United. They stuck with what they wanted to do. They did what they wanted to do. And they were able to convert three times on the New York Red Bulls. And right now, Atlanta United is 90 minutes away from reaching their first ever MLS Cup final. The defense which was a strong suit for the Red Bulls all year long, all of a sudden became a weakness. And that needs to change in a hurry for this second leg coming up at Red Bull Arena on Thursday night. Tata Martino, at the moment, has an advantage. Tata Martino, right now, has 1 foot into the MLS Cup final. We have seen stranger things happen in these MLS Cup playoffs. Yes, you can remind us all of the San Jose Earthquakes coming back against the LA Galaxy, down 4-0 on aggregate. And then the Earthquakes, who had Landon Donovan at that particular time, before he went to the Galaxy. Landon Donovan helped create a 5-goal barrage back at Spartan Stadium. And basically putting the Earthquakes into MLS Cup final glory. That big run. And a part of that 5-goal run, of course, former Metro Rodrigo Faria. But once again, stranger things have happened. But with the away goal rule, I don't think we're going to see something like that at all. Atlanta is too good. But at the same time, stranger things have happened in the MLS Cup playoffs. Weird stuff have happened in the MLS Cup playoffs. You don't know what goes on in this league when that moment arrives. You don't know what could happen if that moment comes into play. Atlanta could bunker in. Atlanta could bunker in all night long and let the Red Bulls go after them and just not convert at all. We shall see what happens. Upset. I know Red Bull fans are upset about VAR wiping out Bradley Wright Phillips' converted goal, an equalizer, an away goal that could have changed this result in a heartbeat. Yes, Alex Mouil was offside, and yes, he also shielded Brad Guzan line of sight of the ball. Yes, in the NHL, you are allowed to screen the goaltender. Here, cannot screen the keeper. He cannot screen the keeper. He must have direct sight of the ball for him to play the ball as best as he can. Alex Mouil, yes, offside, and yes, interfering with the sight of the ball for Guzan. And while many people are saying it's offside, you know that shouldn't have counted, that's not the point, because many will also say, well, what about, passive offside, which is part of it as well. What happened to, well, if it touches an Atlanta player and a Red Bull player grabs it, isn't offside waved off? Technically, yes, it resets. But because it was line of sight, that's why this whole situation was wiped out. But you know what? We'll see what happens on Thursday night. We'll see what the situation will be about. And it's going to be exciting and a lot of fun for everybody when these second legs are coming in. We shall see what happens when we get there. Later on tonight, Jason Longshore covering Atlanta United for 92.9 FM, the game in Atlanta, Georgia, will be joining me recapping Red Bulls Atlanta United. But first, joining me right now from the West Coast in Portland, Oregon, is Will Conwell, my SB Nation colleague from Stumptown Footy. The first leg at Providence Park went 0-0. Will, welcome back. Outside of the scoreline, was it as intense as you thought it might be? Did it disappoint? What was your view of the first leg between Giovanni Savarese and Peter Vermes?
Coming into this game with a nice long run up to it, I could have told you that it was going to be a grind. But as the game was getting closer, I was kind of talking myself into the idea that this would be a fun back and forth game. But games between the Timbers and Kansas City never are really that. So this was an intense one, but golly, it just always turns into tight match between these two teams over the last few years, and this one was no different.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I think we can see, you know, how tight to the vest Peter Vermes has his tactics, no matter who he's facing, whether it's a hard-fought opponent, a rival, or even a former teammate like him and Savarese were for the Metro Stars when the league got started in 1996. What did Gio try to do to counter Vermes's tight tactics? Or you expected Gio to play the same way that Peter did, close to the vest?
Well, the Timbers this year have been at their most successful when they have taken the sort of defensive footing. But in this one, Kansas City, and I think the Timbers were aware that they were going to do this, but in this one, Kansas City were much more willing to sit back and cede possession. And the Timbers, was a rarity for them this year. They took the possession and they applied pressure with it, which, I don't think, especially in light of the way that Kansas City's games against RSL played out, I don't think a lot of us were really expecting was going to happen. But the Timbers had their chances, and they came close a couple of times, but they were never quite able to break through SKC. So, whether the Timbers' tactics were really successful or not kind of depends on how you feel about the second road leg. In the past, the Timbers have been really confident going on the road in the playoffs. And I think they should be here as well, but Kansas City is just a great team at home. So I think Timbers fans are going to be pretty nervous going into the second leg because of that.
But just let me ask you this, though, and look, don't get me wrong. I think Timbers fans have every right to feel concerned. That's for sure. But, Sporting Kansas City did not score an away goal. You have that opportunity on Thursday night at Children's Mercy Park. One or two away goals, and, you put Sporting on their heels. And that, because they're going to need at least, if you get one, they need two. You get two, they need three. So in some ways, while, yes, you have every right to be concerned, concern can come into joy real quick.
Yeah, the pressure is on SKC in this game for sure. Not only are the Timbers kind of playing with house money at this point in that they are the lower seed, a scoring draw goes to the Timbers, like you were saying. Kansas City is going to be forced to come out and play if they want to go through in this game. And the Timbers, I think, are going to have a much greater chance to sit back and hit on the counter like they have been very successful doing for much of this year.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Sadly, 19th minute, forced substitution by Giovanni Savarese. Larry's Mabiala, I understand, was injured. Had to be subbed out in the 19th minute for Bill Pony Tuloma. What was the injury, and is it that serious?
So the reports are that it is an ankle sprain. It's not entirely mm-hmm. clear whether he is, ruled out for Thursday or not. It seems likely that he would not be able to go by then. But it doesn't seem like a long-term injury like a lot of us were afraid might be the case when he went down, especially since it didn't really happen under contact. It was just kind of him pivoting on the pitch. You know, you're always afraid of what could be when you see a guy go down like that. But this is pretty much the best possible case scenario, it seems like, other than, you know, getting off completely scot-free.
So what you're saying is the turf monster was not all the way successful.
Yeah, it tried to bite him, but it seems like he mostly escaped. I mean, you mentioned Tuiloma came on for him, though. I think the Timbers have to be pretty happy with his performance. So, you know, if Mabiala isn't back by Thursday, I think in Tuiloma they've got a guy who, you know, is comfortable playing out of the back and is really pretty remarkable in terms of the athleticism he brings the back line. So, you know, he's a guy who can fill in, especially with Liam Ridgewell not getting another yellow card and being sure that he's going to be able to play in this upcoming match.
Are you surprised in this one? Because, you know, David Guzman at the moment is the only one in yellow card jeopardy, or shall I say one of the players who are now in yellow card jeopardy because he got a yellow in this one in the 36th minute. How much are the passions and, you know, keeping your head swiveled onto your body, will the Timbers have to be in this one? Because, you know, obviously you get a yellow card in the second leg, you're done for the final. If you get a red card in the second leg, you're done for that match and the final. How is that going to be hammering into their heads by Savarese for the second leg?
I think that you saw in the first leg here that the Timbers, while they're certainly going to push the line sometimes in terms of potentially getting a yellow card, they were able to stay pretty under control when it was called for. I mean, you had guys like Diego Chara, Liam Ridgewell, who I mentioned earlier, Diego Valeri, all of whom were, you know, key parts of this game and, you know, were mixing it up throughout the whole match. All of those guys were on yellow cards coming into the last game. So the fact that they were able to go out there, play with an SKC team that, you know, they have a history of, you know, getting tangled up with, and come away without anyone getting suspended for this one. I think that that shows you where their heads are at. And, you know, the refereeing throughout the playoffs, I think not just for the Timbers games, but for pretty much all of them, has been pretty lenient in terms of letting things go. But, you know, they're always going to be the kind of players who can figure out where the line is without going over it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can definitely say that. I think so far the referees, they have not influenced themselves as the focal point of these playoffs. When they've had to put themselves in a position, they've done it the right way. At least I will agree with you on that one. But, you know, you don't want to see a great playoff matchup be ruined by a referee who's going to try and make it about himself, which that's the hope of the case that will not happen, obviously. But still, we'll see what goes on. All right. I know there's still a second leg coming up in a couple of days, but I want your opinion on this. After nearly a full season, seeing Giovanni Savarese run the Portland Timbers, do you compare or do you differentiate? Or is it a difference between Caleb Porter, John Spencer, and Gio, you know, similarities or differences? What do you think?
Well, I think that when you look at Gio versus Caleb Porter, you know, you have two guys who are going to look to implement a system, and two guys who are, you know, both coaches who are comfortable you know, making adjustments and fitting that system to their players that they have available. What I think that you would see that's different between those two guys is in the way that Gio's kind of looking to bring in players to the club culture and kind of growing that And he's got a lot of guys who have been really important parts of the club for a long time, who I think are, you know, can be big parts of helping him do that. But, you know, talking to the players and talking to people around the team, it just seems like Gio's growing a really healthy culture within the locker room. Now, you know, that's not to say that Porter didn't do something similar, but the way Gio's going about it seems to be different in terms of, you know, at least what you hear about him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, then again, you know, I'm kind of partial to Gio. I mean, I've seen him play. I've seen him manage the Cosmos and when the NESL was around, and obviously it's not around at the moment. Who knows when it'll ever come back. But still, though, you have to say, I think right now, I think the Portland Timbers are doing very well with who they have being managed their club. And I just think that Gio's doing a pretty good job so far. But we'll see what happens towards the end of this conference finals two-leg series. But what do you expect? I know you said already, you know, you're a little nervous about going to Children's Mercy Park, but what do you think the Timbers need to do to prevent Sporting Kansas City from taking advantage of being on the road at Children's Mercy Park?
Well, I think that we saw Kansas City make some adjustments in the second half of Sunday night's match. Or Sunday afternoon's match, I don't know, whichever. Sunday's match, that were really able to get them back in the game and let them put a little bit more pressure on the Timbers. So I think the Timbers, when they come out in this one, you know, really need to be aware of the different ways that SKC can get forward and attack you. And, you know, they just need to stay organized and be ready for the sort of tactical changes that Vermees and his team are able to throw at you, not just sort of in the beginning of the game, but throughout the match as they adjust and look to find the weakness in teams. So if the Timbers can do that, if they can keep things locked down, then, you know, they're going to have the same chance that they've had in all their best matches this year, which, you know, is, I feel like I've said it a few times at this point, but, you know, it's Diego Valeri and Sebastian Blanco and, you know, whoever they've got up top with them. And, you know, recently it's been Jeremy Evanbise, and he's been quite good. So, you know, as long as the Timbers have those guys up top and they've got an organized, committed defensive group in the back, you know, they're going to be dangerous for whoever they face.
Yep, absolutely, and it's definitely going to be a fun and interesting second leg on the road. Obviously, what are you expecting? Are you expecting to get in regulation, or you think it's going to go into extra time?
I think that this one, I think it's going to end in regulation. If it's a draw, I don't think it's going to be a nil-nil draw. I think that the Timbers are really going to look to hit out on the break, and I think that I think it's going to get a little bit crazy by the end of the game.
It probably will, and let me say this. If it does go into extra time, that means the result will be nil-nil after 90 minutes. So, Will, thank you again as always. I'll hopefully talk to you on Friday night. Take care, and enjoy the holidays, my friend. Have a good evening.
You too. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Will Conwell, SB Nation colleague, Stumptown Footy, covering the Portland Timbers. Now joining me to review this first leg at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, of course, from 92.9 FM in Atlanta, Georgia, The Game, radio analyst, and of course on Spreaker, Soccer Down Here. Jason Longshore joins me. Jay, look, I'm not going to basically, you know, go one way or the other here. While Atlanta United deserved the victory, I think you have to admit there's a bit of a disappointment here because Chris Armas changed his tactics to start this match. And I don't think you were expecting this. I don't think I was expecting this. But they were trying to bunker or play more defensively in the first half than you know, as much as they were, you know, doing it. And I just think Armas made a very, very tactical error, even though he straightened things out in the second half.
Yeah, it was strange. They didn't play like the Red Bulls. They never really even got there. I mean, second half wasn't even really the press either. Atlanta had a system that I think would have handled the press better than it usually has. I think Atlanta went to Tata Martino's verticalidad. Don't play with the ball in your own half, play in the other half. Dominated possession in the first half and dominated creating chances. I mean, ultimately, that's what it comes down to. And the Red Bulls really struggled in the run of play to create anything dangerous. They looked their best on set pieces. Whereas Atlanta United, even with the Red Bulls trying to defend, not really from a deeper position because they still played the high line that they're known for, it was just a compact two lines of four right around the midfield stripe. Bradley Wright Phillips and Kaku in front of that. It just didn't work. I don't think you have the personnel to do it. And I was shocked. And I was shocked that at halftime you didn't see major adjustments. I don't know if you can put it all down to Kamar Lawrence's absence, although that's part of it. It was very surprising to me. And this is something that, you know, we've talked about a lot this season. The New York Red Bulls are incredibly powerful and destructive at what they do in the way they play. If there's a knock, it's been, what do you do if that doesn't work? And we learned last night that the question is, what do you do if you decide to not play to your style, play and you know, reflect your identity in a match like this? I don't know if they have another way to play where they can be effective.
No, I agree with you. There was a lot of question marks going on there. Now, you know, Michael Murillo, I thought he didn't look like himself either. The back line looked a bit disjointed, not so much between Aaron Long and Tim Parker, but we'll get to Parker in a minute, but more so at the fullback position. And I know Connor Lade, you know, he's always going to go out there as an engine. He tried his best. He's going to go out there and fight every single inch of grass, every single inch of turf, but you know, you just have to say, even though I don't think Kamar Lawrence's absence due to the knock he produced, they said it came from training. Some have said it came from being with Jamaica at the CONCACAF Nations League match. Either way, it looked like Michael Murillo was not himself.
You could say that for a lot of the Red Bulls in this match. And I think some of that goes back to playing in a system and playing a style that is unfamiliar. You come into this match and you look at it as 180 minutes. And yes, there have been questions about the Red Bulls in the past in kind of running themselves out of gas in the first leg of two-leg series. And what do you do if a team bunkers against you? Atlanta didn't bunker. Atlanta played a 3-5-2 that was a little more conservative early on. You know, it's going to play a little more over the top, but not just direct for direct's sake. It was targeted, and especially when it was Connor Lade on that left side, Atlanta United looked to exploit Franco Escobar against Connor Lade on a regular basis, and it worked. But for me, the biggest thing I keep coming back to, because there's been a lot of talk about Chris Armas's New York Red Bulls creating more chances and creating a new way to play. These are the numbers of chances they've created in their last five games. I mean, this is going back to the Philadelphia game of regular season. 6, 7, 5, 8, 4. Four last night. Lowest in the Chris Armas era. You can't just rely on set pieces and penalties to get through at this stage.
No.
And I think the Red Bulls are a better team than this. Kaku, what is going on with Kaku in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think at the same time, I think, I mean, you have to admit this too. I think he got, I think Tata Martino got into his head. I know there was a bit of arguing between Kaku and Martino along the near sideline. And even you could tell Almirón, Martinez, you know, they were able to psych him out, I think, in this one. And you saw him create that stomp not – I think it was on Villalba, or was Villalba coming back – coming off the bench? I forget who it was. It could have been Escobar.
Villalba was off the bench.
On Escobar.
Yes. There were two different incidents with Kaku right around that same time. There was one before it, I believe, on Nagby. That was a late shot after the ball had been played. Referee came back and talked to him, didn't show a yellow. And then a few minutes later, you had the incident with Escobar. And that was after the Tata Martino conversation on the sideline where Miguel Almiron came over and walked Kaku away from the bench because – Kaku was more worried about having a conversation with Tata Martino. It wasn't looking at him at that point. It was
exactly.
A little bizarre.
It was very bizarre. And then I think when they got to halftime on ESPN, I don't know if you saw it on your monitor, but on ESPN, I saw Tata Martino go to Kaku and console him. And I guess they apologized right over there during when the first half ended. So at least thankfully, you know, everything's forgiven and, you know, head back into the locker rooms, your respective locker rooms, and don't worry about it. I mean, you can tell Kaku respects Tata Martino. I think every South American and every Argentine footballer respects what Tata Martino brings to the table, whether he's a national team coach or a club team coach. The man deserves the respect, and I think that's what got into his head when Tata Martino was not looking at Kaku. Kaku felt he disrespected him, or he was being disrespected in some strange way. But, you know, like I said, when I tweeted it, I said, you know, he's got to calm down. He can't do this or else he's going to be, you know, in deep trouble with a yellow card. It could have been given a straight red.
Yeah. It was a very strange situation watching Kaku. I mean, I love him as a player. I love what he brings to the table, and I think it was the right signing. But the second half of the season, even before last night, he hasn't been as involved in an attacking sense. He's doing the work from the pressing sense. I mean, he's fitting in. It's just I think you bring him into the team for matches like last night, and there wasn't any production there. But let's flip it over to the Atlanta side real quick. Yeah, you mentioned Tata Martino and the respect that people have for him. I think he got the tactics 100% correct here. I think he nailed the lineup.
Absolutely.
Lineup surprised us a little bit. Julian Gressel in the middle, Franco Escobar on the right, Jeff Lorenowitz comes back in as a center back. And all three were critically involved in the 3-0 win. Lorenowitz with an assist, Escobar with a goal and an assist, Gressel with an assist. Gressel with a lot of strong defensive work centrally, playing kind of as a left central midfielder in the three part of the 5-3-2, 3-5-2 centrally. Escobar was man of the match, in my opinion, and Lorenowitz was a rock in the back. Those were the three questions that I had coming in lineup-wise, and Tata nailed it.
You know, I have to give Lorenowitz a lot of credit because the opening goal to Josef Martinez, that was a fantastic ball he crossed. Now, you know, I blame Tim Parker a little bit because I know he tried to track that ball, and even though he had no idea that Martinez was behind him, he misplayed the ball. And, you know, when have you seen Josef Martinez? He can create his own space, that's for sure. But it looked like he was allowed that space to convert the goal. I mean, he can still create his own space and still convert. He can have no space and create a goal out of the blue. But to me, you know, Martinez, I think he got lucky enough that Tim Parker misplayed the ball. And at the same time, Murillo was behind him, but at least, what, 5, 7, 8 feet away to allow him that space?
Yeah, it's twofold. Parker loses connection with Martinez, which he just can't do in that moment, and no one stepped to Jeff Lorenowitz. I mean, Jeff Lorenowitz picks up the ball around midfield, is able to carry it 15, 20 yards. No one near him to contest that ball. And if you give Jeff that much space, he's going to put it on a dime, and he did.
Oh, absolutely.
That was maybe the most surprising thing about it for me from a defensive standpoint. The Red Bulls, I noticed early on there's a moment where Connor Lade dumps it into the defensive half for Atlanta, as we see New York do time and time again. Bradley Wright Phillips puts his arm up, calls off the press, and you got to the situation where 10 New York players on the field are within about a 20-yard strip right around midfield. It's two lines of four plus BWP and Kaku. But as the game went on, and as Atlanta was able to swing the ball from side to side, switch the point of attack, hit those long diagonals and find targets, New York never adjusted. They got very narrow.
That's right.
They just never adjusted to what Atlanta showed them. And that's where I think you have to have some questions for Chris Armas. As this game went on, the adjustments in match just were not there.
No, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And, you know, that's the big question mark right there. The other question mark on the Red Bull side, and I want your opinion on this. And, you know, everyone, I know on the Red Bull side of things, the fans were complaining, how is that offside? You know, why didn't the flag go up? I know VAR overturned it. And I understand the sight of the ball for Guzan obviously was being blocked by Alex Mouil. And, yes, he was in an offside position. And, you know, there's still many question marks. Was he, you know, was the goal waved off because it was offside by Mouil, or was it because, you know, line of sight was blocked by Guzan? Now, I kind of make the argument a little bit that, you know, if you look at Mouil, I'm not saying he was not offside. He clearly was. He clearly was offside because you saw him at least – try to avoid the ball as Bradley Wright Phillips took the shot. But do you think that mattered more because it was more in an offside position or because line of sight of Guzan was blocked?
It's the interference. And this is what VAR has to start getting right, because there was no communication. You know, I'm sitting there in one radio booth. We have the Red Bulls English language crew right next to us on our right. We have the Red Bull Spanish language crew one door down. We have our Spanish language crew to our left. TV in the building as well. I don't think anybody had a clue what was being looked at until after everything was done. And that's just unacceptable. People in the stadium, I had tweets today, people in the stadium said they didn't know what had been called until they heard us on the post-game show driving home. That type of stuff is a problem because it creates – this type of discussion where we're wondering about the call. It was the correct call, the harsh call, but, and you go back and look at it, he's offside. And we see that angle, and I'm like, okay, he's offside. But you can't tell if he's interfering. From our angle watching in our booth, you can't tell what the vantage point is for Brad Guzan. There was a camera angle behind the goal where you can see it's almost in a straight line. Brad Guzan, Alex Mouil, ball. And he tries to avoid the shot, sure, but he's still in that line of sight and interfering. You can see Brad Guzan almost lean to the left at one point, trying to get a look at the ball to see where it is. He's being interfered with. So it's the correct call. And we saw some debate afterwards about, oh, this call never gets made. It was called on Joseph Martinez earlier this season. Darlington Nagbe scores a goal, and Joseph Martinez had made a diagonal run. Julian Gressel played it back to the top of the 18 instead of into the six. Martinez is right in front of Sean Johnson. Nagbe scores, but the goal is called back because of interference. That one was that he was closer to the goalkeeper, but still interference. It's the right call, even if it's harsh. But VAR has to explain this better. We have to know quicker what is being looked at and what the decision is.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you there. I mean, you know, I at first, you know, watching this, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm watching the replay, how was that considered offside when, and I'm not saying, and I'm not disagreeing or anything like that. You know, yes, he was in an offside position. There's no doubt about it. But I still discuss about, you know, he's walking away from the ball, or he's trying to avoid the shot, trying not to be part of the ball. If you're walking away from the ball, yes, you're offside, but you're not involved in the play. But, and I'm not disagreeing with you as well. That was clear interference. That's what everyone has to understand. And, yes, we need better communication, not just from the referees, but I think there has to be some form of, okay, you do the box for a video review, and then you wipe your hand saying no goal. I mean, in some ways, I think what needs to be done is – referee or VAR needs to inform not just the referee, but also inform the fourth official to contact the public address booth.
Absolutely.
And tell everyone in the stadium.
It's easy to do.
It's easy to do. It's
easy
just
to
a
do.
Simple fix. It's a simple fix.
Mm-hmm. You have an assistant VAR. Now, you have an assistant VAR, and that was part of the scope of their role as it was announced when VAR came into the league last year. We have not had assistant VARs announced as to who they are from a booking standpoint until this round of games. The All-Star game had one, but that didn't really matter. This round of games, the first time we actually knew identities for AVARs. Didn't see them. Don't know, you know, what they were involved. We don't see the VAR anyway, so that's not the issue here. But have everybody on a headset. You have the fourth official on the headset. The referee is having the conversation with the ARs, with the VAR, and he makes his decision. Somebody, and the assistant VAR is the one who, according to everything when VAR was introduced, the assistant VAR is the one who's supposed to be in charge of communicating that decision to the stadium PA announcer and media and broadcast. It doesn't happen. It does not happen. And there's no excuse for why it doesn't. If the AVAR is more involved in finding the correct camera angles to show the VAR on an incident to speed up that process, that's great. Then the fourth official should be able to, they get the message, relay it to the PA announcer. You have staffers, you have stadium staff right there at all times. It should be an easy logistical thing to do. It has to start happening because sometimes, like this one to me, I think with an explanation, correct camera angle, okay, you get it. We all understand it. But the people in the stadium never see that.
That's right. And there's still question marks going on. You know, within the booth, just like what happened when Atlanta United was at Yankee Stadium, where, you know, Almirón's goal was waved off. We had no idea what happened. I know you didn't have any idea what happened.
Nope.
Until
correct
later
call
on
again.
You got. Yep. Correct call again.
And we didn't know.
But
and that's the thing.
Be
that's where it's just it's difficult. It's got to be better because VAR, there are so many questions about VAR that I think start to go away when decisions like these that are correctly handled and hard to see with the naked eye, hard to understand if you don't have the right camera angles to see it, when these start getting explained properly and you cut off some of that, you know, the debate about, oh, was it right? Was it wrong? No. We don't know. Show the correct angle, explain it properly. I think some of that goes away, and I think people begin to trust VAR more.
Exactly. And I think this is the other thing, too, which I think it's still a little bit of a detriment to the officials because I think you know as well as I do, you know, in soccer, unlike in the NFL, in the NHL, even in Major League Baseball, where everyone understands the signals a lot clearer, I think with VAR, when it comes to the communication to the people who watch the games live, at the stadiums, at the grounds, including what's going on in the press box, the television booths, the radio booths. There's no real communication. You just, you know, you blow your whistle, you point to the foul, you blow your whistle, you show the yellow card, you show the red card. Nearside assistant, all he does is raise his flag for offsides. He tells which position the ball or who possesses the ball. Referee says, okay, points to the spot, that's a penalty. Points to the keeper, says, okay, that's a goal kick, points to the corner flag. There's no real communication, verbal communication going on because they cannot explain once they do the, okay, we're going to wipe out the goal, like, you know, the hand motions, or you're going to say, you know, you blow your whistle, you do the video monitor thing, and then you point to the goal saying that counts. There needs to be more information coming, and I think we are both in agreement here.
Yeah, 100%. I'm for VAR. I'm for video assistant referees. I want to see it move more to the model like we saw at the World Cup, like we see in Serie A, in the Bundesliga. I think there's not much stopping Major League Soccer from doing that. Honestly, I think it would be more cost effective to have a centralized location where video's fed in. But the communication has to improve for the credibility of the program. Because right now, I think too many people, when it goes to VAR, they immediately get frustrated. They immediately get angry because they don't understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm. No, I absolutely agree with you there. All right. I know I'm going to see you Thursday night, and you better stay over and don't rush out of there like a bat out of hell. But still, though,
Thursday night, we are heading back right after the match.
That's right. I know you are. I know. Typical 92.9 Jason Longshore travel plans. Here we go.
That's what we do.
But it's a 3-0 lead for Atlanta United in this aggregate. And yes, I think you've seen plenty of history in the MLS Cup playoffs then and now. Stranger things have happened in the return legs. I don't know what the Red Bulls are going to do, but if I can ask you this, what is Tata Martino going to do? Is he going to stick with his tactics, or is he going to bunker in now? Because you got a 3-0, as I said already, a 3-0 lead in the aggregate. One away goal will definitely end it for the Red Bulls, unless something screwy happens and it comes out of the blue. What do you think Martino is going to do?
I don't think anything changes dramatically. And just like we talked about the Red Bulls changing from their style in this game and maybe overthinking it, I don't think Tata Martino comes in and bunkers. I just don't think it's in Atlanta's DNA. I don't think they're going to risk very much. And that's been the story in the postseason for Atlanta. You know, it's really easy, I think, when you look at Atlanta United to only think about the attack and to only think about Joseph Martinez and Miguel Almiron. This is a team that has conceded one goal in three matches in the 2018 postseason. This is a team that's only conceded five shots on goal in three matches in the postseason. This is a team that's very strong defensively. And I don't think they have to dramatically change anything to protect the lead at Red Bull Arena. I think early on you're probably going to be more erring to the side of let's play the ball into the other half, and if Almiron and Martinez can chase something down, that's great. If not, okay, fine, Red Bulls come attack us. I think you might see that early on, kind of weather the early storm. I think you have to avoid set pieces because Aaron Long and Tim Parker are a handful. Aaron Long, I think, might be, outside of Kendall Waston, the best in the league on set pieces, whether he is heading it back across in more of a setup role or trying to finish it himself. Aaron Long on set pieces is a guy that I don't think Atlanta really has a big answer for. I don't think anybody in the league does. So you have to avoid those. If you can get one, great. You're not really playing to go look for it. You're not going to open yourself up. I think Escobar, and if it's Garza on the left, he left the match late with what could be an injury. He finished okay, but might have been precautionary. Garza, if it's McCann, I think your outside wingbacks might stay home a little bit more. That might be your biggest change you see from Atlanta United. But if it's the same 18, same 11, same general style, I would not be surprised a bit.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll wait and see. I know I'm going to see you Thursday night over at Red Bull Arena. And all I can say is let's see if the strangest things have ever happened. Because one thing is for sure, and depending on what happens, is that I know the New York Red Bulls, and this popped up, after a loss, apparently, the Red Bulls come back with a win, and they are 7-1-3 after a loss this season. And New York has 6 3-goal performances after a loss. So that's going to be an interesting stat right there. We'll see what happens. But I will say this, though, Jason. I'm not saying they're going to get all 3 goals in the first half, but they get 1 or 2 in the first half. Atlanta might be in trouble, but then again, you never know. Maybe Atlanta finds a way to disrupt this whole situation, and you'll be hosting the MLS Cup final. Thank you again, and talk to you on Friday night.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Jason Longshore, analyst for Atlanta United, 92.9 FM, The Game, and, of course, soccer down here on Spreaker.com. Well, real quick, Red Bulls fans, let's give you the audio for both. First things first, the head coach of the New York Red Bulls, Chris Armas.
All right, Chris, so obviously tough loss, but your team has played with their back against the wall before, but now with the season on the line, down 3 goals, going back home, what's the message that you have for your club going into that match on Thursday?
Look, it's going to be difficult. It always was going to be. We put ourselves in a hole, but we came out of a series where we scored 3 in our building, and that's the goal, the starting point. We'll score the first goal, and the rest will follow. But We'll come out a little bit differently with the energy and the fight that's going to be needed. But it's pretty clear what's needed to be done. I'm going to go home and I'm going to get it done.
It seems like in the second half, the team came out a little bit more aggressive, getting that goal by Brad that eventually was overturned after review. Do you think that kind of changed the momentum of the team, being that the goal, it was big in that moment, and then having it get called back? What do you think that did to your team?
Yeah, look, you score a tying goal that gets called back. Yeah, it deflates you a little bit, but listen, Atlanta put a lot into it. They put a lot into it. All their players fought hard the whole time. I mean, there's always a little bit of a letdown if a goal is called back, but we didn't make enough plays on each side of the field. So, yeah, we let ourselves down that way. But give them credit on the night, Atlanta, and we'll be up for the next one.
And Kamar, he's listed as day-to-day. Is there anything, you know, do you think that his presence is really missing, that, you know, it happened during training? Not sure what really went down, but how much was Kamar missed into the game?
I'll say two things. Kamar, you know, is a big part of things around here. He's had a great year. We all know that. And listen, maybe he'll be back for leg two. We'll see. It is day-to-day. But more importantly, that Connor Wade stepped in and did a good job. He was solid. He gave everything like we knew that he would. It was a big test, a lot of direct play. He was fearless on the night. So Connor stood up admirably, I believe.
And how does it feel to have a bunch of veterans in the locker room, especially Captain Luis Robles, and also leaders like Bradley Mark Phillips and Ryan Merritt and Connor Wade as well? How much confidence do you think those guys have that can fill the younger guys going into leg two?
It's going to be needed. It'll be essential that the leaders step up, that we step up, the coaching staff, that the rookies step up. It's going to be an effort that takes everyone, and I really believe it's going to come. It's going to be, we were down 3-0 at home against Columbus earlier in the year, and maybe 5 more minutes, we would have tied that thing up, but we only had 45 minutes and we did it. So with 90 minutes, we're going to go after it, one goal at a time.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay.
Chris Armas, head coach of the New York Red Bulls. Pardon me. You know, it's really simple what the Red Bulls need to do. Put the ball in the back of the net. And do so. Don't hurry it up. Don't go out there and try and rush the whole thing. You have at least 45 minutes in the opening half to try and get, pardon me, 2 goals. And at least, you know, put some doubt into Atlanta United. If you can put some doubt into Atlanta United, then we get to the second half. And then you get that third goal. Then you can force extra time. But also, do not allow Atlanta to get one away goal, because then it's all over. They're going to bunker, I think. I feel like they might bunker, but you never know. They might still play their game and just go forward. But once again, that's all the Red Bulls need to do. So let's go now to the captain of the Red Bulls, in Luis Robles.
They really got the better of us. We came here with a plan, and looking at the result, you can see that we failed to execute our plan. So there's not much time. We just have to regroup and look forward to Thursday. It's very clear what we have to do. We just go one goal at a time.
I think it's sort of going to be important for you guys to get an early goal to set the tone at home on Thursday.
Of course. Of course, when you look at the Columbus game, for us to get a goal right off the bat, change the complexion of the game. And it's going to be tough, right, because we can't let them score. We just have to go for it. But I think at this point, our backs are against the wall, and there's nothing left. We just have to the tank and do all we can for 90 minutes.
Anything surprise you about the way it's
not? No. I mean, they're a good team. They've been good all year. They've been explosive at home. They're amazing. But I think just looking at the way that we gave up the goals, we lacked some discipline. And we made it a little too easy for them. So when you have a team as talented as them and you make mistakes, and they're going to punish you. So, look, we have a great group here. And in my opinion, it's a very special group. It's because of that, the belief is going to be that we can turn this thing. And it's going to be near, it's very difficult, near impossible, but we'll just continue to believe that we're going to do what it takes to get done. And like I said, we'll just take it one goal at a time. And on Thursday, we'll come out flying and do everything we can to advance.
Thank you.
And that's Luis Robles, captain of the New York Red Bulls, as the New York Red Bulls fall in the first leg to Atlanta United by a final of 3-0. So let's quickly recap this situation. Atlanta United 3-0 on the Red Bulls, 0-0 Portland Sporting Kansas City. Here is the schedule for Thursday night. It will be on Fox Sports 1, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The New York Red Bulls will be hosting Atlanta United, a tall task for the Red Bulls to try and make a match and a series against Atlanta United. And at 9:30 Eastern, 8:30 Central, 6:30 Pacific, Sporting Kansas City hosting the Portland Timbers, and that will be on ESPN. And then the MLS Cup Championship will be on Fox, the national channel of Fox. And then also Unimas as well, as this is going to be a huge, huge second leg for two of these four sides that are going to try and get to the MLS Cup Final once again. It will be in the East. Will it be at Red Bull Arena or will it be at Mercedes-Benz Stadium? So we'll have to wait and see what will happen when we get to Thursday night, November the 29th. Let me thank my guests tonight. I want to thank William Conwell from Stumptown Footy, my colleague of SB Nation. And I want to thank Jason Longshore for joining me to discuss that first leg. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Talk to you guys this Friday night for the second leg review show. And then next Monday, the 2019 CONCACAF Champions League draw. We'll see if we'll be the Portland Timbers or the New York Red Bulls who will gain that final spot in pot one. Talk to you guys on Friday night. Thank you very much for listening. So long, farewell, and bye-bye for now.